All rise. The Honorable. The judges of the United States Court of Appeals for the Eighth Circuit. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The United States Court of Appeals for the Eighth Circuit is now in session. All persons having business before this honorable court may now draw near and they will be heard. God save the United States and this honorable court. Chief Judge Loken.
Please be seated. Good afternoon and welcome to this special memorial session of the United States Court of Appeals for the Eighth Circuit. We gather today to pay tribute to our esteemed colleague and dear friend, Circuit Judge Donald P. Lay, who passed away April 29, 2007. Judge Lay was appointed to our court by President Lyndon Johnson in July 1966, after distinguishing himself as a brilliant trial lawyer in Omaha. At age 39, Judge Lay was the second youngest person ever appointed to a federal court of appeals. He served as an active judge of our court until January 1992, including 12 years as our chief judge. After taking senior status, he continued to teach law, to write books and law review articles, while all the time continuing to hear nearly a full load of cases in this court and in other courts of appeals around the country, until health issues forced him to retire in January of this year. Many have recounted the achievements of this remarkable man, as you will hear from our guest speakers this afternoon. He had boundless energy and compassion that he devoted to his family, to the court and his judicial colleagues, to the University of Iowa, where he received undergraduate and law degrees in 1949 and 1959, to the University of Minnesota and William Mitchell College of Law, where he taught law for nearly 20 years, and to the protection of civil rights and individual liberty and the defense of the jury system that he so admired and understood. He was also a man of continual charm and good humor, an avid golfer, fisherman, card player, and storyteller who was simply fun to be with. Even when I was a victim of his friendly but competitive spirit, I couldn't help but be amused by the impish grin on his face and the twinkle of it in his eye when he sunk a critical putt, as he usually did. Judge Lay was the chief judge when I was appointed to this court in 1990. He arranged resident chambers for me down the hall from his chambers in the St. Paul courthouse, and we spent many hours discussing, or I should say he was teaching, court procedures, his judicial philosophy, particular cases, and the events of the day, both political, sports, and so forth. His insights were invaluable. And Judge Lay and his wonderful wife, Miriam, went out of their way to make my wife, Caroline, and me feel at home with our new court family. All of his federal judicial colleagues were privileged to have him as both a colleague and a friend. He served the court, his country, and the people of the Eighth Circuit well indeed. The audience today include Mrs. Lay and their five daughters, Susan, Betsy, Debbie, Cynthia, and Catherine. Also 11 circuit judges and a distinguished alumnus of this court, Judge William Webster, 18 district judges, 4 magistrate and bankruptcy judges, 12 of Judge Lay's former law clerks, and many other members of our court family. We are grateful that so many have come to join us in this important celebration of his life and judicial career. I will now turn these proceedings over to Judge William Riley of Omaha, who has the unique distinction of being both a former law clerk and a judicial colleague of Judge Lay. Judge Riley? Thank you, Judge Riley. I'm very sorry Judge Murphy isn't here, because as the other present active judge from the state of Minnesota, she too would have some wonderful insights into the years we spent serving on the court with Judge Lay. And Judge Haney spent the most years on the court with Judge Lay, and I, as you will hear in his own words, I quote, "Chief Judge Donald Lay and I both joined the Court of Appeals for the Eighth Circuit in 1966, Judge Lay in July and I in December. He and I were not only colleagues, we were close friends. I constantly looked to him for advice and counsel. I did not know Judge Lay before I joined the court. He had practiced in Nebraska, Iowa, and Illinois, while my practice had been confined to Minnesota. He had attended the U.S. Naval Academy, graduated from the University of Iowa Law School in 1951, and was awarded the Order of the Coif. At 39, Judge Lay was the youngest judge ever appointed to the Eighth Circuit Court and the second youngest ever appointed to any court of appeals. Judge Lay became Chief Judge of the Eighth Circuit in January 1980. The next decade was one of great growth in the number of appeals filed. Judge Lay took the lead in modernizing the court to handle the increased load both effectively and fairly. All the while, he continued to carry a heavy load of cases himself, writing more than his share of opinions, concurrences, and dissents. Although Judge Lay took senior status in 1992, he continued to be actively involved with the court, writing precedent-setting opinions. Judge Lay retired on January 4, 2007, and he died on April 29 of this year. He is survived by his wife Miriam, 5 daughters, and 10 grandchildren. His wise counsel will be greatly missed by the court, the bar, and the litigants. Gerald W. Haney.
So, as I understand, when I talked to him, was that the day he would be traveling and starting his trip home, and he also sends his regrets. But in his place, I asked Judge Bye to read a letter and say if he would. Judge Kermit Bye, covering our northern flank from Fargo, North Dakota, was in private practice after serving as an assistant United States attorney and earlier as a special assistant attorney general for the state of North Dakota. As a lawyer, Judge Bye served on our profession in various roles with the American Bar Association. Judge Bye received his commission to the United States Court of Appeals in the year 2000. And Judge Bye was one of those judges coming from private practice. I turned to when I came on the court and said, never get easier. And he assured me if I could stick it out for 2 years and start getting just five.
Thank you very much. I'm going to read a letter that Judge Bright prepared. I might just fill in a little bit of the background. Judge Bright, myself, and recently retired Judge Frank McGill all have our chambers on the same floor in the courthouse in Fargo. And in our earlier careers, Judge Bright and I came from the same law firm, and he never failed, but when he introduced me, that I was one of 3 people to replace him at the Vogel Law Firm, and which was also true. And he took great delight that he had such a presence of force, which he did, that it took 3 people to replace him. And there is nothing, Miriam, that I can assure you, there's nothing that he would want more than to be here today. But he has asked me to write this letter, and when we are done with it, I will present it to you at the reception. And it goes as follows. My admiration for Judge Donald P. Lay is unbounded. When I think about his life and career as a judge on this court, I most fondly remember his unfailing commitment to civil rights, and especially so during my early years as a judge beginning in the fall of 1968. In those years, this court, like federal courts across the nation, was called upon to consider and interpret provisions of the then recently enacted Civil Rights Act of 1964. Simultaneously, it was also called upon to adjudicate school desegregation disputes in the wake of Brown versus Board of Education. Not only were these cases politically charged, but they posed difficult legal issues of first impression. While change for the better was imminent, it was imperative that the court proceeded carefully. But even while proceeding with care, Donald Lay always reminded us that we should not lose sight of the bigger picture. And so, in my view, we best honor the memory of Donald Lay and his contributions to the law by recognizing that he was a leader, one of many, who helped to ensure that society completed the transformation from one segregated in terms of race, blacks and other racial minorities on the one side, whites on the other, and also one in which women suffered discrimination, particularly in employment, to one in which all persons are truly equal in the eyes of the law. Much has been written about Donald Lay's immense contribution to the law and his good works as a person, and in that regard, I can offer nothing new. I can share with you, however, how important Donald Lay was to me personally. I loved him as a brother. He was one of the best judges I have ever known, and he was a great person. Until his death on April 29 of 2007, Donald Lay worked tirelessly on this court for 40 years. The day he died was a great loss, not only for his family and friends, but the entire judiciary. Among the judiciary's many bright lights, he was a shining star. He and I were true friends and always close colleagues in the law. I shall never forget him. I send personal greetings to Don's ever-loving wife, Miriam, and to all of his family. And on a personal note, I would share those remarks because I didn't know Judge Lay quite as well, although I had met him and actually argued several cases before he, Judge Haney, and Judge Bright as well. And he was a true leader of the court and a fine gentleman, and you couldn't have a better friend.
Servant to justice and to this court. But of course, it's impossible to capture in a few words all that gave an extraordinary person such an influence on all with whom he came into contact. Other jurists, the bar, the advocate clerks, court staff, and thousands of litigants who sought justice in this court over the last 40 years. The judge would not want us to make him out to be larger in our memories than he was in life, and indeed, we need not do so. But he would approve of taking this time to recognize a life given in service to this court and to the values it embodies. For he was a guardian of those values, and he worked hard to prepare us to accept the responsibilities of guarding those values in his absence, a fact and a day he knew would come. As we struggle to accept his passing, we acknowledge the place he will forever hold in our lives. As I have considered that place over the years, and especially over the last few months, what strikes me about my relationship with the judge, a relationship which he nurtured for over 30 years, is its very personal nature. Upon further reflection, of course, I realized that that was true for each of his law clerks. He made each of us feel special, and each of us was right. I can almost hear the thoughts of my fellow clerks in the room today thinking, but I was special. And that, of course, is the point. Douglas was special. He was a life-tenured federal judge, and he allowed himself to be fully human in our presence. I never once saw him adopt an attitude which foreclosed the human vulnerabilities of openness and candor. He challenged our thinking, and he encouraged us to challenge his. Judge Lay was a man of passion. His life's fire burned brightly and fueled his work and effort on a daily basis. He had a passion for service. He saw the law as an extraordinary opportunity to serve his country, the principles he cherished, the people with whom he shared this world, as well as its future inhabitants. Whether he was the jurist working through a legal thicket of facts and precedents, or a dinner companion who relished the discussion of ideas and concepts he had yet to master, or a teacher of students, or a mentor to his clerks, or a golf companion schooling others on the finer points of some golf-related game, he served all with great passion. He also had a passion for the roles of the judge and of this court. He understood the importance of an independent judiciary and saw this court as a bulwark against abuses and tyrannies of all kinds. He understood the importance of efficiency and effectiveness in judicial administration and worked diligently to ensure speedy resolution of the cases on the court's docket. And Judge Lay had a passion for humankind. He saw the law in its fully human context. Each case, he often reminded us, involves real people with real issues whose hopes and dreams were invested in the matter before the court. Judge Lay has passed these ideals and his passion for them to us. We accept the responsibility for their safekeeping and indeed for their enhancement during our tenure at the bar or on the court. Donald P. Lay was a rare gift, a person of extraordinary talents and caring, who used his gifts for good in our world. He responded fully to the admonition of St. Peter, to whom much is given, much is expected. Will be missed. But he leaves a legacy which will echo through the lives of those who served with him and the lives of our children and our children's children. Today, Judge Lay's law clerks stand on his shoulders, and with hearts full of gratitude, affection, and admiration declare, well done, Donald P. Lay, Judge of the United States Court of Appeals, for the day.
Longstaff, the Southern District of Iowa, for clerking for
Counsel Donald D. Lake in 1988 to 1989. Boyd is a shareholder in the Winthrop and Weinstein law firm in Minneapolis, Minnesota, practicing commercial litigation. He is a frequent speaker and author. Following much he gets Lake footsteps at this point. Tom Boyd is also the president-elect of the 8th Circuit Bar Association.
I'm very honored to make a few remarks today on behalf of the Secretary of Office from Minnesota era. It began in 1983 when, as Chief Judge, he moved his chambers from Omaha to Oklahoma. This move can be fairly characterized as bold, innovative, and unconventional. Only imagine a couple of few feathers in the leaves like the other. But the move shows the excitement of the process. The move reflected a judge who was absolutely committed to this court, committed to the lawyers who practiced before this court, and committed to the people over whom this court has jurisdiction. Although I am one of the Minnesota law clerks, I have to say I never thought of Judge Lake as being a Minnesota judge. His ties throughout the 8th Circuit were deep and lifelong, and his devotion to the court was circuit-wide. He had his early roots in Iowa, where, as you've heard, he received an excellent education. He developed his reputation as a superb trial lawyer in Nebraska, and then when he went on to court, he became well-acquainted with Missouri, where here in St. Louis, the court used him most of the state. Here in this building, he gave a genuine fondness and appreciation for the collegiality of his colleagues on the court, and greatly enjoyed his interaction with the lawyers from throughout the seven states within the 8th Circuit. Judge Lake's devotion to the 8th Circuit was also evident in his hiring of law clerks. Over the years, Judge Lake came to hire nearly 90% of his law clerks from law schools that are located here Circuit. I suppose his willingness to occasionally hire a graduate from Yale, Harvard, or Michigan was his form of affirmative action. But my point is that Judge Lake is clearly a man and a judge of a whole circuit. And when he moved his chambers, he was not moving away from anywhere, but instead simply moving within his beloved. Judge Lane's office in St. Paul was always a beehive of activity. I stopped by his chambers a few months before I began my clerkship. I expected to see a quiet, tranquil academic environment that one would conventionally associate with the research and writing scholarly community. That is not what I found. The phones were ringing off the hook. Law clerks were rushing to and fro. And the secretaries were typing like mad. In the midst of all this, Judge Lay stood in the midst of all this, seemingly engaged with each member of his staff simultaneously. And I was not sure what I had gotten myself into. But once I started, my apprehension was transformed into exhilaration. Working with Judge Lay on opinions, speeches, and articles thoroughly. He was respectful of his law clerk's views, and he was appreciative of their hard work and their well-intentioned. The work was always fulfilling and satisfying, even when it involved administrative payment. Judge Lane took it all very seriously, and he strove to get to the right conclusion in each matter he undertook. Judge Lane once wrote that he approached each case as a great and new adventure, and showed. He worked with extraordinary zeal and energy. He was always coming up with solutions and finding ways to get things done. He pressed to get everything done as quickly as possible, and then he immediately moved on to do more. Fundamentally, his instinct was to take action. He instilled in his law clerks the principle that justice delayed is justice denied. So he pressed to get cases decided and opinions filed as quickly as reasonably possible. And yet, while he was incredibly productive, Judge Lane never cut corners, and he never sacrificed quality. He He was a true scout. Notwithstanding his demanding administrative responsibilities and all of his other commitments, Judge Lay always gave priority to writing his opinion. He worked quickly and with great intensity. He had a brilliant grasp of the law in so many diverse areas. He was thorough, and he paid attention to detail. Kay Oberle, one of the Omaha law clerks, recently wrote a tribute to the judge in which she described how much her legal education was expanded by the opportunity to clerk for Judge Lay. We St. Paul law clerks had the same experience. He taught us in a way that allowed us to maintain our independent thinking and to develop self-sufficiency and confidence as fledgling young lawyers. He was a workhorse, and we had to find ways to keep up. But he was always patient with the mistakes that we inevitably made as a result of our experience. He worked with us in a collaborative manner that made the process highly educational and fulfilling for his law firms. And notwithstanding his whirlwind of energy and productivity, Judge Lay was always cordial, warm, thoughtful, and giving of his time to his law firm. I think the fondest memories that many of us have of our clerking experience are those times we just spent talking with each other. I do have to note that not all of his work and serious contemplation. Judge Lay also found time to have fun. And he also, and in doing so, he found time to include his law clerks in. There were many memorable occasions, many great outings, all very delightful memories. I won't get into them. But those are memories that we'll cherish. Not only with working with Judge Lay, but spending time with him. Judge Lay made us all feel that we were part of his family. He had a great family. Mrs. Lay was always a gracious and warm hostess who was so interested in what we were doing with our lives and what was new with our family. Lovely daughters who were the delight of Judge Lay's life were so gracious in sharing their father with us. Judge Lay also had a great staff. They were devoted to him, and he was devoted to them. Together, in Omaha, we have Mary McQuinn and Harvey Dutch. St. Paul, his secretaries were Judy Anderson, Cindy Frank Hansen, and Captain Cusack. Judge Lay and his staff were true professionals, and were very kind and tolerant of the English. After we finished clerking, Judge Lay continued to be a big part of all of our lives. He regularly organized law clerk reunions, and otherwise kept in touch with each of us. He was interested in our careers and proud of our accomplishments. He made each of us feel that we had the talent and the capacity to do what no one else could. Judge Lay treasured his relationship with his law clerks. When he took senior status in 1992, he referred to us as his adopted sons and daughters and said that our enthusiasm and dedication had brought the bright spot to his judgeship. Needless to say, clerking for Judge Lay and receiving the gift of his friendship has enriched and brightened our lives beyond anything that could be put into words. Judge Lay made the most out of his life. He worked with energy, enthusiasm, and conviction. He cared deeply about people. And indeed, Judge Lay's greatest contribution, lawyer, judge, and for me, are manifest in the enormous number of people whose lives he affected and changed for that, including his clients. Thank you very much.
In 1994 to 2006,
Dean Stein was the executive director and chief operating officer of the American Bar Association. In the fall of 2006, Dean Stein rejoined the faculty of the University of Minnesota Law School as the Everett Fraser Professor of Law. He, too, is a frequent speaker and author, and is a longtime friend.
Thank you very much, Judge Riley. May it please the court. Chief Judge Loken, members of the court, honorable judges, area of play, and family of Judge Lay, and friends of Judge Riley. Judge Donald P. Lay's life was a life of enormous accomplishment, which earned the admiration and respect of everyone who knew him. And others today have spoken about these magnificent accomplishments and will speak about them. Distinguished jurist, record-setting longevity on the bench, committed protector of civil rights and individual liberties, national leader in improvement in the administration of justice. I would like to reflect on Judge Lay's remarkable legacy as a dedicated teacher and scholar. It's been said that all great judges are great teachers, and of course, Judge Lay was a teacher throughout his career on the bench. His opinions helped us all to understand the law more clearly, and he was an inspirational teacher and mentor for all of his many law clerks through all of his years on the bench. Beyond that, however, through virtually his entire career on the bench, including his years as chief judge, Judge Lay also taught a course or seminar in a law school every year. He accomplished this remarkable feat first at the Law School of Creighton University, and later at William Mitchell College of Law and the University of Minnesota Law School. Indeed, I think it was noteworthy that when Judge Lay decided what he wanted to do next after he left the chief judgeship and took senior status, it was to a position as law school teacher that he decided to devote his full-time efforts for a portion of each year. My colleagues and I at the University of Minnesota Law School were pleased that Judge Lay accepted an appointment to our faculty for a portion of each year as the first James A. Levy Professor of Criminal Procedure Law. At Minnesota, and later at William Mitchell College of Law, Judge Lay taught courses in criminal procedure and first-year civil procedure. But his favorite course, and the one he taught at Creighton, William Mitchell, as well as the University of Minnesota, was a seminar on the current term of the Supreme Court of the United States. The seminar invariably attracted some of the brightest and most dedicated students in the school. The subjects of the seminar were selected cases scheduled for argument in the then current term of the court. Individual students were given an assignment to represent the views of one of the Supreme Court justices. The students studied as many opinions as possible by their justice and attempted to become thoroughly familiar with the philosophy and the values of that justice. In the seminar, the students then discussed how the selected cases would be decided, and the students argued and voted as they believed their justice would vote. What a remarkably inventive and effective way for law students to gain an insight and understanding of the way in which law and legal theory develops. The students were fortunate in other ways as well. Whatever the size of the course enrollment made it feasible, Judge Lay met individually with every student in his class to become acquainted with that student and offer valuable career-shaping advice. Clearly, Judge Lay had a lifelong impact on the future careers of his students. It was a joy to have Judge Lay on our faculty. Students revered him, he engaged constantly with the entire faculty, and he threw himself wholeheartedly into the program of the school. In fact, in one year, Judge and Miriam Lay traveled to Uppsala, Sweden, where he taught in the law school summer program in Sweden.
Judge Lake didn't limit his law school involvement to teaching a course or seminar each year. In addition, he authored and published a remarkable number of law review articles in many of the leading journals in the country. His pace of scholarship would do credit to many full-time tenured faculty members. Judge Lay authored well over 50 articles in legal periodicals on subjects ranging from trial and appellate advocacy to judicial administration. One of his favorite pieces was an article examining one of his books, The Great Writ, The Writ of Habeas Corpus, published in the Minnesota Law Review during the time he served on the faculty of the school. Beyond these articles, he delivered dozens and dozens of speeches, lectures, commencement addresses, and presentations at law schools, bar associations, judicial conferences, and legislative hearings. And all of this was accomplished while carrying a heavy caseload and meeting the enormous administrative demands of the chief judgeship. As the dean of the law school, I had numerous conversations with Judge Lay during those years in which he talked about his great love of teaching law. And in a recent conversation I had with Judge Lay's longtime secretary, Judy Anderson, who's here today, I learned that as a result of this love of law teaching and scholarship, at one time Judge Lay gave serious consideration to leaving the bench for a full-time career as a law teacher and scholar. I first met Judge Lay shortly after I became dean of the University of Minnesota Law School, and I quickly learned that Judge Lay was extremely interested in bringing the work of the court closer to the law school. Deans and professors were invited, indeed we were urged, to attend the Eighth Circuit Judicial Conference each year. Judge Lay had changed the conference from an invitation-only gathering of select invitees to an open registration conference for attorneys and law professors in the circuit. The importance that Judge Lay attached to attendance by law school deans is illustrated by my personal experience in missing the conference one year in 1985 when the American Bar Association annual meeting in London met at the same time as the Eighth Circuit Conference. For years afterwards, Judge Lay would remind me of my unfortunate choice to go to London instead of the Eighth Circuit meeting by continually referring to that conference as the one you missed. Another important contribution to legal education by Judge Lay was his commitment to schedule oral arguments before an Eighth Circuit panel at each law school in the Eighth Circuit on a regular basis. These actual tort sessions were major events at every law school. At our law school, several hundred students crowded into the large room in which the session was held, and in addition, overflow students in other rooms observed the arguments via closed-circuit television. Following the arguments, Judge Lay and his colleagues on the panel always remained and answered questions from the students about oral argument and the decision-making process of the court. As nerve-wracking as it was for the attorneys to argue their cases in front of a large body of law students, the learning experience for the students in observing law being made was remarkable. And I might note parenthetically that a judge currently on this court has observed to me that the quality of oral arguments in cases argued in law schools in front of a large body of law students frequently exceeds that of arguments in other cases. This practice of scheduling oral arguments in actual cases in law schools begun during Judge Lay's time as chief judge continues to be followed to this day by the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals and other appellate and trial courts. I wanted to note my wife Sandy and I had the wonderful experience of visiting with Judge Lay and Miriam just a few weeks before his death. And although suffering from numerous infirmities, he talked that evening with great enthusiasm about many subjects. He was so happy with correspondence he had recently received from many of his former clerks, and he recounted with great pride their most recent accomplishments. And he still had another book he hoped to write. It was a book about judicial humor, a collection of amusing stories about judges that Judge Blake had heard through the years. And he proceeded to recount a story about an off-the-record exchange between two now-deceased justices on the Supreme Court of the United States while they were on the bench. When he got to the punchline, Judge Lay wasn't exactly sure which of two ways it was said. "Well, Judge Lay," I responded, "since they are now both deceased, whichever way you say it was is the way it was said." He laughed and went on talking about his plans to write the book. What a wonderful, full life he enjoyed. Judge Lay, your life epitomized the admonition of Justice Oliver Wendell Holmes, an admonition that you often quoted to your clerks and to your law students. "To live a life in the law in a grand manner." That you did, Judge Lay. You lived your life in a grand manner. May you rest in peace.
Maybe that's what made him so popular with his law clerks. many of whom are here today. One of those clerks who was just coming on board, as I recall, when I came on board, is Catherine Overman, here today. Catherine went on, as many of you know, to be vice chairman and general counsel of one of the greatest accounting firms in the world, Ernst & Young. And years later, 2002, ready to marry Haynes Johnson, one of the best English journalists, turned to Don Lane to perform the service. By that time, he was pretty bowed over with some of the physical infirmities, but he was happy to do it as long as it was for her, and I had the privilege of attending that ceremony. Don managed to get to where he was supposed to be without any help, won the service in a firm voice. I suspect that that ceremony will be with us all for a long, long time. His style on the bench, as with his friends, was unfailingly courteous, never raising his voice, but passionate in support of the rights that he believed to be enshrined in our Constitution. Don made no secret of his liberal views, and it wouldn't surprise you to know that we did not always agree. But his way of presenting, the thoroughness of his presentation, the help of excellent law clerks who got the message, brought many of us to a point of view that I think was more consistent with the Constitution than we might have originally imagined when we began to serve him. And that's a lot of judgment. I look around this court and realize that I did not have the privilege of serving with any of those who are behind me here today, and that only Senior Judge Mike Bright was on the court at that time. And I think of all the judges whose lives were better for having served with Don Lane, it's very impressive to me. I recall just one case. I recall a lot of cases, but I wanted to talk about one in which I sat with Judge Lay that involved the rights of association and free speech. In Galen versus the University of Missouri, a 1977 case, the Missouri Students Association and the Committee on Student Organizations, Government, and Activities had granted recognition to Galen, including the right to hold meetings on campus and to discuss issues important to that organization. The university administration reversed the student governing body and legal action followed. In the district court case, a respected judge, Judge Elmo Hunter, affirmed the administration's action. On appeal, we reversed, observing that the solution to tough problems not found in the repression of ideas. Always felt good about that case. I know that Don made important and thorough analysis of the law made it possible and made it stick. Reference has been made to Don's love of the golf course. I'm a tennis player. I played this morning at 6:30 and I was thinking, Don would appreciate that. Because golf was his game and he was passionate about it, but he kept Cairo might be along on any occasion when we might do it, and had a great time. And I recall one time when asked if we could play at Burning Creek Club in Washington, not too far from my house. And we left the course. I can't remember who was driving, but we had a flat tire. And I still have a picture of two circuit judges, the director of the FBI, and the United States Senator with their thumb out. Now, he paid a price for that. He developed a deteriorating spine. And one by one, he had his discs fused until he had no more discs to fuse, and he kept on playing. He was close to the Mayo Clinic, and they designed a metal template to prevent his making a damaging bad swing, which might hurt his spine, and he persevered. I question the fairness of that, thinking that he really was good enough not to need that kind of help. But he kept on until he could no longer do it. My last memory of John was at a dinner that he hosted with Miriam, Judge Haney, there, in St. Paul, not too long before his illness took him. And those were really rich moments as we thought about the old times, the good times, and because it was our little time ahead. I think what a remarkable life he lived in the law. Heard about his teaching, his manners, his love of his law clerk, and his passion for the underdog to be sure they got due process. Reference was made to Justice Holmes. I think of two main ways of measuring a life in the law, and one of them was given by Oliver Wendell Holmes. He said whether a man will take from aspiration or act and forward or scale the ice, or from fortune or spade and will look downward and dig, one and only success that exists as a man is to bring to his work a mighty heart. The other measurement comes from Judge Learned Hand, who said, descended to us some part molded by our hand, passed on to succeeding generations with reverence, with pride. We at once, his servants and his masters, do our fealty to all. By either measure, Judge Donald Lay was a huge success, provided a rich legacy and a rich career, a wonderful family man, and a man to be admired for succeeding generations. Well done, one good and faithful servant of the Lord.
I know Judge Lay touched the lives of most of you out there. And we could have called on many of you to come up here to speak. And I just want you to know that all of these comments are made from representatives of you who had an opportunity to relate some of their wonderful experiences with them. I want to thank all of you for coming. I want to thank Mr. Lay and Mr. Lay. I thank the members of the court family, fellow law clerks, and all of our guests. There will be a reception out in the outside area, the foyer area, courtroom afterwards. And we hope you all.
Thank you, Judge Riley, and our thanks to all the speakers who have shared their experiences with Judge Lay with us. Judge Lay will be dearly missed. We've lost an exceptional jurist and colleague, but we know that the court will benefit from his 40 years of service for many years to come. This concludes the special memorial session, which will become part of the permanent record of the court. We invite you to join us at the reception. We are adjourned.